As the world changes, so does leadership. Hello, I'm Carlos Martin, host of Leadership Evolving on Now Media Television. On Leadership Evolving, we bring you real talk about mindset, resilience, culture, influence, and purpose. Every episode features thought leaders, innovators, and everyday visionaries sharing insights, experience, and strategies you can use. Let's explore how your voice can help others evolve their leadership. Watch Leadership Evolving on Now Media Television and step into the leader you are becoming. And today, we explore what it takes to lead with purpose and impact. Leadership today, evolving tomorrow. Welcome to Leadership Evolving. I'm Carlos Martin. Today, we look at the human side of scaling, moving from messy plans to audacious proof. Joining me is Anthony Campolotero, and I know I'm going to butcher that. We'll talk about that. Founder of MVD Concepts. Anthony is a strategist who turns ambitious ideas into measurable results. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Oh, Carlos, thank you for having me. Real excited to be here.
Absolutely. I know you told me how to pronounce your last name, and I've known you for a while now, but can you tell us the proper pronunciation of your last name?
Don't worry about it, but it's Campolotero.
And did you tell me it means what again?
Keeper of the cows, land of dairy. There's a few different iterations on its meaning.
That's funny.
It's really cool. I do have the longest last name in Wyoming, pretty sure.
That's hilarious. Well, Anthony, I'm super excited to have you here for so many reasons. One is I want to tell the audience a little bit of how we met. We met at a coffee shop. I think it was in Napa. And then from that, you became a client of mine, as an executive coach, and then you became a friend. So what do you remember from us meeting? I'll tell you my side is, all I remember is this guy that's well-dressed, really well-spoken, and I think we talked for 2 hours at a coffee shop from just meeting right next to each other.
Yeah, one of the coolest social experiences ever. I mean, to call you my friend is really fun, and it's been an adventure for so many great reasons. But what I think what was the impetus is that you saw me hold the door for an older woman to enter Model Bakery in St. Helena. And I think that's what connected us right away, is that you knew that, and we both knew that our grandmas expected that out of us. And I think that's where we hit it.
I forgot about that. You're absolutely right. So much there in that conversation. The reason why I bring it up, because I remember, is this guy, polished, well-spoken, articulate. And I remember saying, this guy is a leader. This guy is someone that I would follow. So I wanted, obviously the show is Leadership Evolving. I wanted to see if you could talk a little bit about that, because again, is the executive presence that you have, that natural leadership, that gregariousness. And that's what I saw within minutes, probably within seconds. So I want to talk a little bit about that. How's that? Did you learn that? Was that natural? Is that something that you really worked on?
Well, I think there's a past, present, and hopefully future that I could talk about a little bit, Carlos. So the past really focuses on really making it up as you go, and really being comfortable with that gray space, right? Especially around things that are new, net new. You are going to be in the unknown for a lot of it, and how to be comfortable with it. And I think I was just kind of using the skills I had naturally, working with different professionals in different professions to just carry me along. And with that said, you know, what brought us together at that professional level is that I hit a wall. And I do believe that in the current, I'm working a lot more on growing those skills from an organic level to best practices. And I really think we're going to get into that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And the future's bright, right? The future's bright because I have a great foundation of experience. I have great network. I have a great coach. I have a great friend in you. But at the end of the day, the work never stops. And I do believe that's the biggest takeaway in terms of leadership on so many levels.
Yeah, I love that. And one thing that I remember pretty early on is your openness, your flexibility, your openness to learn. And when I meet individuals as a possible client, sometimes I see the opposite. When someone is too rigid, they're not open or they're not ready. Did you feel that you were open? Did you know that about yourself? Has that always been a tendency of yours to be open and learn? Because again, I do want to help individuals, but there's just so close-minded that it's really hard for them to explore any other way of seeing things.
Yeah, there's a few ways I want to go about that, Carlos. The first is, you know, as a former college athlete, my defensive coordinator would always go, "Know thyself, Anthony." Mm. And that is a big one. You really have to know yourself if you're willing to grow, you're willing to scale, or at the opposite, you're willing just to settle. That's a big, important question that I believe any leader, entrepreneur, founder needs to ask themselves daily. Mm-hmm. The next one is, and we've touched about this in our sessions too, it's like being vulnerable is a huge part about being a leader. You can't be the know-it-all. And I really firmly believe if you're the smartest person in the room, if you feel you're the smartest person in the room, you shouldn't be in that room.
Yeah. Yeah, I always say that. Tell me a little bit more. The way that I see it is, you know, I grew up very poor, very fixed mindset. And I remember many, many times wanting to be the smartest person in the room. That made me feel good. But I realized that fed my ego. And I also realized that I wasn't growing. Yeah. I look good to my, you know, in my small environment with my friends, like, "Oh my God, Carlos, you're the smart one." Okay, cool. And you kind of want to stay there. I want to talk about a little bit of the vulnerability, as you mentioned, the uncomfortableness. It seems you're comfortable now. Was it difficult to put yourself in that room, you know, full of leaders, of CEOs, whatever that may look like? Was that natural? Was that something that you had to work on? And to realize that it's like, I need to put myself in those rooms so I could grow.
Well, I think why we connect so well, Carlos, is that we come from similar backgrounds, right? I think we're both first generation college graduates in our family. We have very, I think, very great family structure, but we're kind of breaking out of a different mold, which is, I really enjoy that we're on that current path together. And just like you said, I was definitely overconfident in my previous experiences. And it took a minute to understand that I am not the smartest person. And because of that, I need to bring people along who are the smartest in an individual field to bring the business or the executive to a higher level. And that was an inflection point for me. And I'm happy I experienced that earlier into my professional career, because I think people get stuck in there, or they get stuck in that for their whole professional lives, and they don't understand that being vulnerable is a big part of understanding where you can grow.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. That I have a hard time, something sticking with me to be able to say somebody else is smarter than us. Let me put myself there. And when I hear you say that, I almost feel like, okay, we're coming from a place of less than. We're not as smart as individual. And for our audience listening, they might be thinking, well, I'm not the smartest somebody else is. I guess where I'm going with this, look, there's always going to be someone smarter than us. I want to change the narrative here and say, put ourselves in an environment. Yes, someone can be smarter than us. And at the same time, someone can be thinking different than us. They have a different experience. It might have been as an executive or as in the C-suite. So it's not only of someone being smarter, but also having a different experience and how they grew up in order for us to grow. So a lot of times it's not only being smarter, but also having a different experience, having a different filter. Do you see that, or how do you, what's your take on that?
I do believe diversity is one of the greatest things a business can have.
Yeah.
Over many different demographics. And going back to being this, you know, not the smartest person in the room, when I work with C-suites, right, you're dealing with a CFO, a COO, a CMO, you know, you can make up a lot of three-letter acronyms right now in positions. But they're each coming from a different division. And if a company has a problem, they're going to look at it at a different lens. And where I believe the best leaders come in is how to align those different opinions, those different personalities, to focus on a plan to overcome the problem and grow from it.
So the diversity doesn't only look different on a physical appearance, but you're talking diversity between like a CMO, right? A CEO, diversity in how we see things and our filter and what we're really concentrating on. And then how do we align all those, I guess, thoughts and mindset and business?
Yeah, let me give an example. Like early in my professional career, there was a stigma that marketing and finance don't get along. And I drank that Kool-Aid. And now I am like, that is the complete opposite. So when I work with clients or companies, my two favorite people to work with are the head of marketing and the head of finance. And there is unbelievable, symmetry that those can align on when you remove that stigma. And I think that stigma is still so prevalent today. And I believe it's my professional goal is to break that stigma, because if you can align those two, you can align a business.
Yeah. I like that, because you're kind of breaking the status quo, if you will, because a lot of the times is okay, marketing, finance just don't see eye to eye. Operations and salespeople don't see eye to eye. And I love that you're saying, no, that could be the case. And maybe that has been the case, but now you start to change the way, you know, one of my favorite lines is, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And you're like, no, wait a minute. Marketing and finance do get along. And on top of that, how do you have them align and really start seeing it that way? So I love that. I do want to go into a little bit of diversity. We're going to go onto a break now. And I want to dive into a little bit more of diversity of how we look at things in our mindset. So thank you so much. Coming up, we move from leader's mindset into the mechanics of the machine. We'll discuss how to build an operating system that actually works.
We'll be right back with more insights, stories, and transformative leadership conversations. Stay with us. Leadership today, evolving tomorrow. I'm Carlos Martin, and this is Leadership Evolving on Now Media Television. Let's continue the journey. And we are back. Leadership today, evolving tomorrow.
This is Leadership Evolving on Now Media Television. Watch anytime on Now Media TV, the TV app available on Roku, iOS, and Android, or stream it on Now Media TV. So, Anthony, we kind of left on the diversity. I want to dig in a little bit more on the diversity of way of thinking. And you mentioned marketing and finance can get along and should get along. So what's your experience from experiencing it a different way in the way you're seeing it now?
I think let me rephrase a little bit. They have to get along, right? Because if you look at the top of the pyramid of any corporate structure, if those two massive department heads are not seeing eye to eye and are not aligned on the company's goal and vision, then there's an immediate breakdown at the top level. And that is going to trickle down to every other person in the company. We've seen it. Carlos, you and I have been parts of different size companies for a long time. If you're seeing dissent at the top, it's definitely going to be happening at the bottom. But if you're showing a great collaborative effort at the top, it's going to inspire folks, you know, lower on the totem pole to do the same, because the goals are aligned.
Yeah.
And with those goals aligned, I mean, the big buzzword is trust.
Yeah, I remember us, you know, working on a 360 interview with you, and, you know, the word trust you know, came up. And how do you have the marketing team trust, I guess, the finance team? The reason why I ask is because I feel like they work in silos a lot of the times.
Yeah.
So if I put my corporate hat on many years ago, is that I remember that I had my own KPIs. Yeah. And my KPIs, my comp plan was different than a different department. And I remember that, you know, creating a little bit of conflict. So we could say, let's align. But if our KPIs, meaning the way that I get paid, might be different than yours. So I'm going to tend to kind of lean in this direction, and marketing say, well, I'm going to go and lean in this direction. What are your thoughts around that? Am I on something here?
Yeah, Carlos, you're definitely on something. It's, you know, it creates a little bias. And let's be honest, you know, folks show up to work for compensation, right? And at the same time, you really want to make sure that that employee and employer are making sure that there's a lot of love around the company as well. But of course, people are going to be naturally biased to the path of least resistance or the most reward. That is human psychology 101. And what you really do is to backtrack to the relationship just between sales and marketing, because, you know, as a sales and marketer, you know, I've struggled working with finance, and now I'm finding such good flow with financiers and chief financial officers, is that it's a trust but verify thing. So it's like marketing comes with a budget, initiative, and a plan, right? But finance controls the purse strings. So what you do is you find that balance, being like, hey, finance, we want to do these things. One, do we have the cash flow or investment possibilities to do so? And if so, how would you like us to track its success? So it's a little bit of trust but verify. So what I do is when I work with companies, it's like, let's see what marketing has. Let's vet it. How much capital can we deploy? And let's put on a timeline of successes that we want to see in a different time parameter. But here's the fun thing. Finance wants it yesterday. And I'm like, you got to give it 4 to 6 months. And so that's the magic, right? It's like, you know, every marketing project is an experiment. You want to make it as controlled as possible. You want great results. But you have to understand that it's a risk. And I don't have a good stat, but you got to think, if you do 10 marketing initiatives, how many are actually going to work? It's low. But if you don't try, you're never going to know.
Yeah.
And if you're not in a position to try, then you're not putting yourself in a vulnerable place to try. So see, it all connects a little bit.
Yeah, it's all interconnected. And like you said, we need to have trust. I almost feel like the marketing is the creative, and then the finances, it's all about the bottom line. And I want to see the bottom line yesterday. And on the creative, like, we need time to be creative. And like you said, how do you, it's an experience, it's an experiment rather. So how do you, how do you create that trust between those two segments?
Well, just to take a step back, Carlos, I've worked with a lot of creative CPAs, CFOs. They get creative, right? You know, they don't live in the four walls of a P&L all the time. And you really got to tease that out of them and really be like, hey, like, you know, you are a financial artist. You can support a marketing initiative, and let's look at the books and see how we could do that. And you got to play a little bit of a, it's almost like being a relationship counselor, right? You give, I get, what do we want to see, common goal. And what you do is you just put the CMO and the CFO in a room and you bake it out. You bake out what you want to do, how much you want to spend, approve those, and be like, okay, what do we want to see in 4 to 6 months? What creates value?
You know, when right? That's what you a CFO that, wants I... to do. And, sorry, go ahead.
No, it's, everyone wants to create value because everybody wins. But folks just see value in different lenses, right? So if you take a CMO, it might be impressions or site visits or et cetera. The CFO wants to see conversion, wants to see sales. Mm-hmm. That creates a pipeline with a sales funnel on one, conversion on the other, and you look at those different steps and how folks get there. You provide numeric goals, which CFOs love, and then you're seeing progression, which CMOs love. So that's how you kind of build a win-win team or initiative between those two different departments.
As I hear you speak, I see you almost as a coach yourself. You're a facilitator and a coach yourself, coaching two different departments and saying, hey, I see you, I hear you. You know, CFO, I know you live in the numbers, but also let me get the creative out of you. For them, that helps see the other department. Now you're talking about emotional intelligence. So I see you as a coach with almost like a business coach to be able to get these two different departments in the same room and kind of have them not only aligned, but seeing eye to eye and be able to get, like you said, get the creative out of the CFO for this example.
Yeah. And then the flip side is you're kind of putting the spreadsheet in front of the CMO. You're like, all right, man, let's see some numbers.
Yeah.
Right. You know, yeah, one of my favorite lines is if you can't prove it in Excel, it doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. I mean, we both come from sales, right? It's like if you can't measure it, you can't improve it. And that's a really good point to be able to get on the marketing perspective, because like, look, I love that you're on the creative side, but we still need a time frame. We still need an ROI, whatever that is. So speaking of that, what do you do with companies, with businesses? If you were to give me your kind of a summary, I'm a possible client. What can you do, and what do you do? What do you do well besides coaching companies in different departments?
Well, also with coaching, I love to be a player. I really do love to roll my sleeves up and get dirty with everybody. That's the fun. That is the true fun. I don't like to sit on the sidelines. I've never been like that. But with any company, it starts at the top and understanding where they want to go. And I am realizing a lot of folks who have successful businesses have not looked at what they want to be and who they want to be in 5 years. And that's the first thing I ask, even if it's over a cup of coffee or a cocktail. And then from there, I'm like, okay, let's put pen to paper, because everything else, we're going to work backwards.
So again, I see you as a coach in a very different way. I remember working with you, and 9 out of 10 times with my clients, they're really good at knowing what they don't want. But we're not that great at knowing what we do want. And I know you and I are kind of working on that. And you're kind of doing that for these individuals, these companies, to be able to say, hey, what is it that you want? What is that clarity? And then we kind of reverse engineer it from there.
Yeah. And that's where that's the magic of the buy-in. And the buy-in comes from the narrative. The buy-in comes in the structured reporting and its cadence. And when you have buy-in, very rarely do you lose, especially if you have the right people in the right seats.
So where is the biggest resistance? In your experience working with these companies, where do you see the biggest resistance with individuals, with the company?
I wouldn't call it resistance. I'd kind of call it the hummingbird.
Wait, right? The hummingbird, what is that about?
Yeah, the hummingbird just like pops out of your peripheral and they're like, oh, what's that? It's like, hold on a sec. We set a goal, right? We're going to stay on that goal. Let us continue on that goal. Where a lot of founders and entrepreneurs I've worked with, they are exciting people. They're great. They are incredible visionaries. They are artists themselves and unbelievable at their craft. And where I find the most, let's say, constructive feedback is opportunity is all around us, always in business. And you really have to vet those opportunities to see if they're aligned with your 5-year, 1-year, quarterly goals. You can't just pivot fast, because especially if you have a large team behind you, it's hard to move that big ship with it now, because all of a sudden you want to just pivot, go towards a new direction. You have to create a whole different buy-in program to now move to that one thing that you decided was a good idea, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So is it more about, again, getting more clarity, getting these people in the room, pressure testing things, getting people? Tell me a little bit more as we wrap up this this segment here.
It is clarity in identifying your goals. It is creating buy-in. And as I tell my three-year-old, it's staying on task. Right? You've set the course. You got the crew. Don't deviate from the course. Until, you know, 6 months, a year down the road, it's not potentially working.
Yeah. Right?
Now we do this over again. We've tried something. And that's where you're vulnerable too, a little bit, where it's like, you know, we've tried this. We gave it 100%. It didn't work. Let's bring it back together and see where we want to go next.
I like that. Let's realign and look at the numbers and see what we missed and what worked. We're going to come right back. Thank you for that, Anthony. I want to come back. You mentioned something about staying the course. And in our next segment, I want to talk about AI and see the agility. Oh. And do we need to stay the course, or do things kind of change on a weekly or monthly basis? So we'll be right back. So thank you, Anthony.
We'll be right back with more insights, stories, and transformative leadership conversations. Stay with us. Leadership today, evolving tomorrow. I'm Carlos Martin, and this is Leadership Evolving on Now Media Television. Let's continue the journey. And we are back. Leadership today, evolving tomorrow.
We are back with Leadership Evolving. Vision is inspiring, but execution is decisive. Anthony, you've built your career by building alongside founders that you advise, right, from the sidelines. Tell me a little bit more. I know we kind of stayed on the subject of having the clarity, alignment, and now kind of staying the course. And how does AI come into play? When I think of AI, I think of, crap, everything's moving so fast. I have a friend of mine that took a course in AI 3 months ago, and now it's obsolete. So How do you stay the course, but at the same time have, like, you know, things are moving so fast and be able to pivot and open? We talked a little bit about, like, what I like about you, that you have a way to, that you're receptive and open, but how does that come into play? So, because I feel like that's kind of, it could get a little tricky.
Yeah, AI is tricky. It's it's interesting, to say the least. I refer to my bot as mother. So I'm going to age myself a little bit. If you remember the movie Alien.
I do.
The computer in Alien, they named it Mother. So I named my mother too.
That's funny. Okay. I like that.
And this is how I frame it with, you know, my team, or with any client, or literally with my friends too, because you get a vast amount of different opinions. It's like, you know, how did you feel when you first got your calculator or your TI-83? I mean, for me, it was Sister Marge wouldn't let you use the TI-83 calculator until sophomore year of high school. And before that, what was the next big evolution in technology? I look at AI as if it's fire, it's the wheel, it's the abacus, right? It's your TI-83 calculator. It's a tool. But tools could fail, and you don't want to necessarily rely 100% on that tool. Do I think it's a phenomenal catalyst? Absolutely. Do I think it's a resource? Absolutely. Can you take it word through word? Absolutely not. And where I'm seeing one, like, I worked with a founder for a capital raise recently, incredible experience, super fun project. And we are doing a competitive analysis of folks who are also raising money for a similar industry. Their deliverables included green check marks. And I was like, this is 100% ChatGPT. And so what I look at that is, I do the flip side. As a consumer, if I see any indication of AI like that, I'm like, well, if they're not willing to put that effort into me as a partner, as a consumer, as a brand ambassador, then I'm not going to give them the time of day as well.
Wow, so interesting. I never looked at it that way. Now, when I look at LinkedIn emails, we have a pretty good eye when somebody uses ChatGPT, but I never looked at it as the feedback that you're getting to saying, hey, if you're not going to be putting in the time and the effort to work with me while putting a quick sentence and say, ChatGPT, tell me, or whatever LLM you're using, mother in case. Maybe mine should be Daryl. Remember that movie, Daryl? And so I never looked at it that way. When somebody uses ChatGPT or any LLM, that it gives you some sort of feedback, and it almost seems to kind of, it's almost like a turnoff almost.
I think it is, but here's the caveat. When you're dealing with younger clients, consumers, they don't want to deal with the person as much. So where do you find that balance?
Wait, what do you mean? They don't want to work with the, what do you mean by that?
So for example, like, you know, I worked with a high consumer goods luxury company, and we were baking their pretty much their chatbot that every website has in the bottom. It's like, chat with us now. And it was really great where it's like, here's our five most frequently asked questions that we developed through a survey system and just backlogging years of emails and different inquiries. And we're like, okay, consumers of this age and demographic want to immediately talk to a person. Folks who are much younger and are more, let's say, like literate in these types of bots, they just want to plug in their order number and see where their order is. We can have our cake and eat it too. And I think that's where society needs to be with its dependency on AI, is that you have to offer both. You should be able to answer frequently asked questions as fast as humanly possible through AI, through different platforms and software. But you also have to have a human on the back end, because you're going to get someone who's like, I don't like this. I want to talk to a human.
Yeah.
Now, this is a high luxury brand company that focuses on that human touch. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit biased where like the sales, the customer service needs to be very intimate. But I'm in a position and of a mindset is, no matter what the company is, what the industry they are, what they're producing, the human element is going to be more important than ever as AI develops.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's only going to get worse. And how do we, I always say, how do we bring the humanity back into the workplace? And it's going to be even more important because things are just going so fast and we're disconnecting. Why? Because we want to put everything on that bot, like you said. But how do we, I love that you said it's okay, because now you're thinking about your audience or your customer to be able to say, if a customer or a client wants it this way, let's give them this. If we have the person that's a little bit more old school, like myself, let's give them this. And it's kind of like a both and. Otherwise, you're kind of isolating one market over the other. And it's pretty simple. It's like, why not give them both? So again, it's, I feel like I see you as a coach for these businesses. And also, I think you're tapped into emotional intelligence as well to be able to say, let's take a step back. What can we do for our customer and our client?
Yeah. And that's why you're in business, right? If you don't have a customer, if you don't have a client, you don't have a business. So you really have to understand them, what their needs are, where they go to lunch, really. You want to get to know them as best as possible. And, you know, AI right after COVID is not a good recipe for humanizing connection in both the personal and workspace. And I do believe that we can have our cake and eat it too. And, you know, as folks return to the office, whether that, and I think a hybrid model is a fantastic idea. Collaboration happens at the water cooler, right? Collaboration happens in person. I really, really dislike video meetings. And I'm really happy to do this because you're in Houston and I'm in Wyoming, but you know, in a perfect world, we're doing this together.
Yeah.
In a perfect world, most of these big meetings are happening in a physical room. And I think it's lost right now, Carlos, but I, as a eternal optimist, know that society we're going to work to having our cake and eat it too. Because trust me, I am not one to work in an office 9 to 5. You know me, I'd rather be skiing. But the best and big decisions happen in person.
Yeah, I agree with you again. I almost feel like that's a kind of an old school way of looking at things. I remember doing business at a golf course, doing business at a wine bar where I would just meet someone, you know, like we're always kind of selling ourselves or selling our services or selling our who we are. And we've disconnected from that because I know many people that don't even like talking on the phone anymore. They just send me a text. We are so disconnected. So I feel like now with all this AI and things going so quickly, we need to go, I wouldn't say an overcorrection, but I think this is we're going to need a need and an urge. And I already see it of having that human connection. Just a couple of weeks, I went to a networking event and I had it in person. I've done many on Zoom, but in person, it had been years. And I have to tell you, I felt alive. I loved it. And before I was like, I was kind of sick of networking events. And this time it's like, oh my God, I get to talk to people in person right in front of me. And I remember saying this out loud to a friend of mine. I'm like, I love this. I need to do it more often because it's you don't realize how disconnected you are until all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, I need more of this.
I think that's why you and I connect so well because we're a bit old school. Yeah. And it's funny where I'm like, yeah, I'll just come meet you. And folks are like, what do you mean? We can't talk on the phone or online. I'm like, no, you literally, your office is 15 minutes away or half hour away. Like I'd rather drive the half hour to meet you in person for 10 minutes. And it's funny in Wyoming, there's a saying, you might drive 8 hours to have a 10 minute meeting, but that's where you get the deal done. Yeah. And I fully buy into that.
So, okay. Let's say we're old school. I mean, I'm 25, you're 27, right? It's around that age group.
I'm 27 forever, Carlos.
There you go. So what if our audience right now is a 25, 27-year-old, the person that wants to text, the person that is okay with Zoom? And let's just be clear, we're okay with the Zoom. We just prefer because we've seen how effective it can be. So what would your message be for these younger folks to be able to say, hey, maybe try it out? What will your message be?
Be vulnerable and just set a small goal where if you have, say, 10 meetings a week, make one in person if it's possible and just see how you feel about it. And then try another one because the first one's not going to give you the best experience. But like all things, right, you have to try. And if you're not trying, you're not growing.
Yeah.
And I do believe that when you meet someone in person, you're going to get to know them instantaneously better. Because, Carlos, I didn't find you as a executive coach online or through a Google search, right? I found you at a coffee shop after a very amazing conversation.
Yeah.
And that's, I believe, the magic of both being a human and making a great deal happen is in that connection.
That is, thank you for that, because that is a perfect example, right, of two people chatting, connecting. And like you said, I remember talking for 2 hours and later on it came up that I was an executive coach. And that is the beauty of it. And thank you for that, for these younger individuals, for them to try it out. And I think part of that is just them being uncomfortable and kind of almost questioning their own personal status quo and say, okay, you know, here's this other, you know, Anthony and Carlos and saying, hey, try it out. And if it doesn't work out, try it again and then try it again. And you can see how effective it can be to have that, again, that human connection that you and I had. So thank you for that, Anthony. We'll be right back after this and we'll dive into a little bit more of what Anthony does and working his magic and around leadership.
We'll be right back with more insights, stories, and transformative leadership conversations. Stay with us. Leadership today, evolving tomorrow. I'm Carlos Martin, and this is Leadership Evolving on Now Media Television. Let's continue the journey. And we are back. Leadership today, evolving tomorrow.
This is Leadership Evolving on Now Media Television. Watch anytime on Now Media TV app, available on Roku, iOS, and Android, or streaming on nowmedia.com. Anthony, your work is based in Jackson Hole, but your strategic influence is global. So let's take a look at that and how that shows up. Before we go there, how can people reach you and contact you and get some of your services?
Well, Carlos, thanks. Real easy. You can find me on LinkedIn by my name or business, NBD Concepts Consulting, or just visit nbdconcepts.com and send me an email.
Fantastic. Easy peasy. I like that. Tell us a little bit about your business and what you do. And now that we know how to reach you, tell us a little bit about your business.
Well, Carlos, you and I both like wine. So I'm going to give a wine analogy, the Barolo, right?
Oh, yes.
Right? The iron fist wrapped in a velvet glove. So where NBD really comes in is to challenge founders, to challenge leaders, to challenge businesses to see what they want. That is a big thing. Most folks think they know what they want, or they do, but in their head, I'm going to challenge you. We're going to challenge you to put it on paper. And where the real magic is with the team and I is we're going to build alignment. We're going to build reporting, and we're going to build buy-in. So we're going to build the ship to get you to that destination. That is the real magic of NBD Concepts.
I like that. To stay in the wine analogy, you know, when I see you, when I hear you, and, you know, just from knowing you, you're like a complex glass of wine, right? Opposed to a cheap wine where it's just kind of bold and monotone. There's complexity there, and that's a compliment. But that complexity comes in from having those layers to really know thyself, but also getting to know your client. Like you said, it's like, okay, they think they know what they want, but then once we start to dig in, it's like really, you know, what it is. So again, I see you as a coach and someone that has experiences in many facets of the business. And I think that really comes out when I talk to you, and it comes out for your clients.
I appreciate that, Carlos. Well, you know, to stick with the wine analogy, I was once a very young, cheap wine, and I feel like I've been stored in a really nice cold cellar for a few years, and it's been exciting. And I do believe it's been experience that has really helped accelerate where I am now. And you're a part of that too, Carlos. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Where, and again, this is not about me, but was there a tipping point for you? Was this gradual? Did it have compounding interest, or was there at some point that you had an experience, you talked to someone, or something happened where you wanted to change, you wanted to grow, you wanted to evolve, you wanted to get yourself out of the cheap wine shelf, if you will?
Yeah. It was, I mean, it sounds cliche. It was having kids, Carlos. Mm-hmm. And what it did the opposite, actually. I couldn't be the leader the company needed and be the dad I wanted. And I didn't have the maturity enough or the confidence enough to let go of that position that I had. Mm-hmm. And I turned into the wrong person in the right seat, if that makes sense. And if I had the hindsight, which is always 20/20, I would have left much sooner to focus on the bigger priority, which are two really young kids. Mm. And that was the time where I was like, I can't have my cake and eat it too. And what that did was it gave me the opportunity to finally leave that position with a great company, focus on myself, focus on my young kids and my very, very good looking partner, and understand what I truly, really wanted. So I've consulted on myself for a long time, and this is where I'm at. And I'm pretty happy with it, if that answers your question.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that. And I don't think it's cliche at all. Thank you for that. How did that show off for you when you were saying you were in the wrong seat and wanted to, you know, be there for your kids and your amazing partner, beautiful partner, as you mentioned? How did that look like when you were, how did it feel when you were in that seat, when you felt it was the wrong seat? Tell us more about that.
The company needed more, right? Store expansions, trainings, new staff. And personally, I didn't want to be out the door. I had two young kids. And that is where rubber met the road. And it was starting to show on the P&Ls. It was starting to show in the sales reporting. And I couldn't do it. But now looking back, I didn't want to do it. And I'm just being very honest. It's like, if I didn't decide to prioritize being a dad and a partner during a very, you know, tough time, which is two young kids, I probably would turn into a person I didn't want to be. But it showed both me personally through stress, through gaining weight, through being agitated professionally on paper. And it was starting to boil a little bit. And I was like, there's only one good way to leave.
Thank you for that. So how are things different now? So you pivot. How are they showing up for you? How are you different? Because you seem lighter. And from what I remember talking to you at some point, you know, a few years ago. But how things showed up? How are you different? A different father, a different partner, a different leader. How are you showing up different than how you were before?
Presence would be the big key word. And, you know, present in my business, present with my clients. And then the biggest one is present with my family. And you have to understand, just like if you work with a CFO, you're like, how much capital can you deploy? And, you know, I'm only one person with X amount of time, a whole ton of emotion. And I have to see what is the best way to get that return on energy. So I find the balance. I found the balance right now in balancing the professional and family side of my life. And, you know, the kids are older now. You know, there's no more butt wiping. We're almost out of car seats. Both of them are on skis, right? Like those first 3 years were hard, Carlos. Hard. And everyone has a different story. So for me, you know, that facet's not as hard. So I can now put more capital and more time into my professional career and to my clients, which is super fun. But you know, seldom am I going to miss a soccer practice.
Yeah, I love hearing that. You know, it's something that I don't hear enough of, being a father and being a leader at the same time. I hear a lot in the on the mother, and which is very much so, right? We want to be able to talk about that. Because I think being a mother, being a leader, that, you know, that it's different, but at the same time, it's very hard. And at the same time, I don't hear enough about men that it's still difficult being a father and being a leader, being a founder. Can you tell us a little bit more of that?
You know, Carlos, I called my dad last week and just to thank him, right? About how hard he worked, about how amazing dad he was. You know, when you're a kid growing up, you don't realize that until you become a dad on your own. And just like I view my professional career, I am always trying to break the mold. And I could sit here and say it's really hard being a white heterosexual male, but it's really not. But at the same time, it is our responsibility to make a better world for our children, for our partners, and to show them that there is balance both in relationship, in life, in the professional sphere, in everything. And I think that's where our generation is going to make the most noise, is reestablishing that status quo.
I love that. I love that you call your pops. I saw a bit of emotion there. You know, it's funny how when we're young, we think we know it all. We don't need our parents. We don't need our dad. And it's right. And as we get older, yeah, we realize like, oh crap, I was wrong. Like, hey dad, yeah, you know, I'm sorry. And now we kind of look for that guidance, you know?
So he laughs. I was like, dad, you never told me how hard it was. He's like, you didn't listen.
Your dad is like, oh, I told you, but you chose.
Oh, I told you.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I think that's the that's the beauty of it.
Well, just to hit on it, and I know you a little bit, it's, you know, the two books I wish I read much younger than I did now. One is Man's Search of Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And then the other one is The Diary of Marcus Aurelius. And what that taught me now as a, you know, 39-year-old is that control is a little bit of an illusion. But the one thing that you can always control is who you are at that moment in time. Right? And I believe if you could really master yourself, then you can master the universe. But that work's never done, as I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I love that. Anthony, thank you so much. A lot of wisdom there. I hear wisdom from you. I feel connection, even through, you know, digital from Houston to
2,000 miles away.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think that is, I think nowadays, I think that's a superpower to be able to connect with someone at this level. And I can see all the work that you've done. And I am grateful to call you my friend. And I am super grateful to be able to have this conversation. And thank you for making the time to chat with us.
Anything for you, Carlos. This is awesome.
Likewise. Thank you. Thank you. I'm Carlos Martin. This is Leadership Evolving, where we peel back the layers to see what's underneath, only on Now Media Television.
It's been an amazing journey to work with Carlos Martin over the last few years. And whether it's virtual or in person, you feel at home. You feel that you're with a friend, a brother, and you feel that you are both aligned on the goals that you put together for yourself or as a partner. So I recommend everyone get a chance to talk to Carlos for at least one sit down. It's going to make you think a little bit harder about what you actually want.
Wow, thank you. Thank you.